Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Do my impression of how you sound while you're holding a microphone?
Yeah, I do.
Hey, Ricky, why don't you do a mic check with me? How does this sound? Let me know what you think. This is Gavin on K-Rock 99, bringing you the greatest hits from the 60s, 70s, and tomorrow.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk about the Salt Lake Comic Con, we talk to Terry Mitchell, and we also talk to our beer expert, Mike Riedel. A perfect time for that, considering our beer issue is on stands right now. We are welcoming in Dan Farr, the president and producer of the brand spanking new Salt Lake Comic Con, which will be going September 5th through 7th down to the Southtown Expo Center. Dan, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
You're going to drop a bunch of knowledge on us about what the Salt Lake Comic Con is going to be and all that, but why don't we start just with sort of your inspiration for getting involved with it? What's your own geeky past, if there is a geeky past there?
There is, yeah. I'm a fanatic Halloween haunter, and you say, what does that have to do with Comic Con? Well, Comic-Con's pretty broad in, yeah. As far as the things that go on there, but that isn't necessarily what brought me into Comic-Con, but I have to say that that's, you know, I do
you
have
an
my
entree somewhere.
I do have an extreme side.
Okay.
So that's one thing about me. I generally, when I find something I like, I go all out for it. And so
excellent.
I had the opportunity with the company that I founded, Daz 3D. I was the co-founder of Daz 3D several years ago, and we would travel around to some different cities to participate in different Comic-Cons there,
okay,
to share with them the art tools that we had. And every time I went to a Comic-Con, I was just pulled in by the energy.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. It's fun to meet the celebrities. It's fun to see the artists. I love great art.
Yeah.
It's fun to see the vendors. The vendors have a lot of unique things that they're bringing to the Comic-Cons, and it's always fun to see if you like things with Star Wars or Star Trek, you know, any of the big things or any of the small things, too. You
right.
Know, I did get the opportunity to find out how popular Doctor Who is. That's a bit of a surprise. Maybe you're going to ask me later if I had any surprises in this, and I'll tell you.
Doctor Who was blowing up.
I had no idea. I did see how powerful of a draw some of the guests that are Doctor Who guests have an event. I always thought it was just this obscure PBS show.
Yeah, right.
And but it's a big deal.
Yeah, definitely bigger now than when I was a kid and when it was on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I kind of think of. Just when we're kids watching, you always turn through it on PBS or whatever.
Exactly. But,
And so seeing the energy at the different Comic-Cons, I thought, man, why don't we have one of these in Salt Lake? I really would look forward to going to the Comic-Cons and seeing the costumes that people have. Most of them are ones they made on their own.
That's right.
It's a spectacle.
It's an amazingly fervent fan base that these
is.
Things, that's
There's
for sure.
There's so much passion.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that energy. And as I look back at what kind of motivates me is I enjoy being a part of producing something that provides entertainment or enjoyment for people.
Yeah, okay.
That's kind of with my software background, with my Halloween home haunting that I do.
Right.
You know, I do that. It's just, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of almost a sickness, I guess.
Right. A little obsession.
It's definitely obsessed. And I do it just because I like to see people smile and I like to see them scream and laugh and have fun.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Get that reaction.
Yeah, it's that reaction. And that's what's feeding me for Comic-Con.
Awesome.
And when I saw that energy elsewhere, I thought, wow, we need that here in Utah.
Yeah.
And I want to see that reaction.
Now, as you moved around to these different Comic-Cons, do they have sort of distinct flavors depending on the cities they're in? Or, I mean, obviously there's Comic-Con. Personalities in the fan bases, but you know, San Diego is probably a lot different than Oklahoma City or whatever.
Absolutely. San Diego, there's nothing like San Diego.
That's the granddaddy
of them all. It's the one that you have people coming from all over the world to participate in that event.
Yeah,
it's definitely been overrun by Hollywood.
They use it as a way to show off their big mainstream movies, TV, and all that now, right?
They do, but that, to me, I like that.
Sure.
I think the comic book diehards, the people that are just dyed-in-the-wool comic book fans, probably don't appreciate it as much, but yeah. I think that's kind of, it's been become somewhat of the lifeblood of these events is the celebrity appearances and things.
Yeah.
And I think it helps make the comic book sell more because they have these celebrities that are behind them. And also it brings it more into the mainstream. And I think that's one thing that's kind of happened around the nation.
Yeah.
And I'll get back to your question about the different flavors. Perfect. But Comic-Cons have been growing in different cities at 40% or more per year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just a great growing event.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. But so the flavors of different cities, absolutely. You know, they're all different, but I will say that every one that I've been to has had that common energy that I feel when I go to San Diego, which is, you know, obviously that energy is just overflowing there.
To the nth degree.
Yeah, to the nth degree. But yeah, all these other cities, Philadelphia, New York, New Orleans. I mean, it's an excuse for a party for people.
Yeah.
It's a party that lasts three or 4 days.
People who are into like costume parties, you're always looking for another excuse.
Right? Exactly. You have an excuse.
Let alone to hang with your tribe of fellow whatever, Walking Dead geeks or whatever it might be.
Yeah, right? Zombies or...
Yeah.
The Walking Dead, by the way, that's huge at the Comic-Cons now.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, that's when you mentioned mainstream. I'm like, someone like me, I don't really read comic books, but I got into Walking Dead through TV, and now I might pick up a comic book, right to kind of get really into it.
But you support the franchise nonetheless.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you had some of the Walking Dead guests here in town, you probably would want to meet them.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
By the way, they've been the hardest ticket to book for the show.
That was the next thing I was going to ask. Well, let's talk just a little about the kind of the logistics of putting like something like this together. I mean, obviously, you know, you get a giant place where you can hold it, but how difficult is it to get out there and book, you know, not only vendors and artists, but also the celebrity types?
It's been, I'd say, a really, generally, I would say it would be hard, but it hasn't been. I think so many people want to come to Salt Lake. They want to see how the community here reacts. And so, for example, with the celebrities, that's been really easy to book them. Except for the Walking Dead ones.
Yeah,
which
they're the hottest ticket for everyone.
Well,
right?
the problem with them is that the ones that are filming, I mean, the ones that are still
alive,
right. Still walking with life in them. They are... They'll be filming during that time, and so it's just hard to be able to get them booked. You know, there's still a slight possibility that one of them may be willing to fly out on Saturday and back.
Like, quick turnaround kind of thing.
Quick turnaround, and we'll still be asking. We'll ask up until the day.
Sure.
Because we really like
special event. Yeah,
exactly.
Special last minute guest. Yeah.
But some of the other guests that have moved on, Merle, played by Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
Worked real closely with his agents to try to get him booked, but he had another event planned in Philadelphia or in Pennsylvania, but then something else came up. I guess he got booked in a new film.
Oh.
It's coming up. That's going to be a really big deal.
Cool. Well, and he was definitely like one of the bigger name people that on the TV show, obviously.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, that guy's like been around in movies for 20 years.
He
right?
has. Yeah. And that's the thing is he has. He's been around in, if you look at things, I think it was even Tombstone. I was watching Tombstone and saw him in that. I'm like, wow, that's funny.
Right.
But yeah, because he has one of those faces.
He probably can go to conventions just on Henry Portrait of the Serial Killer stuff, right? For people who are like the horror movie folks.
And I guess he's directed his own horror films too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He's just wildly successful at these events. I mean, I've seen him in several cities and you know, his line will never die down.
Right.
Yeah, he'll always have people there. I'm not giving up hope that some hook or crook way we'll be able to get him. If not for this event, we'll get him for
future.
Absolutely. Because I think he's fantastic and, you know, nice person. I just see one thing I've tried to do with the guests that we're bringing in is I'd like to see how they interact with the fans. That's one of the main things I've been picking up at the other conventions is, one, is who do people want to see?
Right.
And two, how do they react to the fans? Are they just, you know...
Yeah, they just sit there, put their head down, signing stuff?
Exactly.
They
just collecting money for signatures you know, not being friendly
or taking the photos and all that.
But what I find is some of the biggest celebrities, the ones that seem to be the most draw just naturally before people meet them, are the ones that are the warmest people.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not always the case, but just for the most part, what I've seen is there's a correlation between, you know, these guys... these people being very friendly with the fans as they come up. And, you know, it's almost to the point where you feel like they are your friends, and then you realize that, well, no, they can't be friends with everybody they meet.
Yeah, right.
They have to go back to work and,
that's right.
and all that. But they really are warm people that way. So,
can you tell us a little about just sort of the combination of stuff you expect to have for the Salt Lake one? You know, the sci-fi, comic, you know, what are we looking at?
Yeah, we're trying to get a bit of everything. Obviously, the sci-fi, you got William Shatner, and then a lot of the comic books stuff, the artists. And we haven't even finished announcing all the comic book artists, so we have more. There's been a little discussion online. People say, well, it's Comic-Con. Shouldn't you have more comic book artists? But we're still lining them up.
Yeah.
So, you know, we announced the celebrities first just because the celebrities seem to reach the mainstream. And that's just kind of like with film and TV now. That's actually building the popularity back to the comic books.
Right, absolutely.
Because you know, people see a movie they like, or you mentioned Walking Dead, you'd be more likely to pick up Walking Dead comic book, even though you haven't read them before. You say, well, let's see the comic, let's see if it's similar to the show.
Or if you have the authors of the original comics there, well, or
and that's
like, hey,
so fun.
You know?
Yes, like, if you get the artists that have worked on it, and people love to get signatures from the artists that, that you know, illustrate the comic books that they've, or the writers of the comic books.
Yeah, absolutely.
It kind of hits that collector mentality with people.
All right. Where will we see your personal sort of fandom coming through in the programming for this one? I mean, is there anyone that you were like, you know, they might not do the whole circuit, or they might only do the occasionals, but you wanted to make sure...
Well, you want my biases here.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Well, like I mentioned before about the just observing people at other shows, I've had a chance to spend time with several of the celebrities when they weren't working, and when they're hanging out after the event or whatever. And I definitely felt that people like Kevin Sorbo and Lou Ferrigno, I mean, I think people don't really understand how you know, he's really a friendly, good person. And you know, I think he comes across as harsher than, you know, he comes,
right.
you won't like me when I'm angry, right?
That's right.
And they think he's angry, but he's not. He's really cool with people. And Ray Park's fantastic.
Oh, nice.
One person that just from the get-go when I met him was Manu Bennett, was just so nice. And he's from Spartacus, and he's the Pelorc in The Hobbit.
Yeah, nice.
And then also, his role in Spartacus was, you know, he's like the second guy in Spartacus.
Yeah.
And then Arrow. And so last season, he was in a few episodes. I'd say half or so. I didn't count.
Yeah.
This season, I hear that his role is going to go up significantly.
Grow up. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have a whole lot of awesome stuff going on here.
I met Tia Carrere at one of the events, and she's fantastic, too.
Oh, nice.
Very, very nice.
Excellent. Well, we will point everyone to your website, right? SaltLakeComicCon.com.
Yes.
They can find all the info, what you've got booked so far. Can they get tickets through there as well?
Actually, that's the best place to do it, but the Facebook account is a great place just to see what's happening in real time.
Right, as people get booked up and things like that. And they can just search for Salt Lake Comic Con, it'll pop right up.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
Okay. You know, we didn't mention William Shatner as a guest.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think we should.
Definitely.
Adam West and Burt Ward, the original Batman and Robin.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know Shatner, he draws a crowd everywhere he goes.
He does.
Broadway to Comic Con, right?
Yes, exactly.
And he was, he's been in Salt Lake semi-recently, but this
is
a great chance.
January, I think he was.
Back at Kingsbury Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam West, he seems like a pretty hilarious guy, just seeing what he does to play off of that Batman thing and the other things he's done. So
yeah, he knows how to keep his brand alive, which is smart.
Absolutely, that's great stuff. Well, Dan, thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. And everybody, go check out SaltLakeComicCon.com and fire it up on Facebook and get more details as they come in. September 5th to the 7th at Southtown Expo Center.
Thank you. All right. Really appreciate you having me here.
Thanks. Despite their name, Tolchok Trio are actually a quartet that's been playing for almost a decade around Salt Lake City. They released three albums during their time together, including Hello Bird, Ghosts Don't Have Bones, and Abalone Skeleton, which came out, 5 years ago. The band is actually calling it quits now that drummer Dan Thomas is leaving Utah to join the Joshua Payne Orchestra. They are moving down to California collectively to play down there. We're going to play a little bit of Tolchok Trio to remember the good times. This is a song called Goose from their album Ghosts Don't Have Bones. ¶¶ band's last show will be August 3rd at the Urban Lounge. They are playing with the Rubes and Selma. Be sure to check out the show and buy whatever merch Toll Truck Trio might have left before they quit for good. Terry Mitchell is one of the few survivors of a racially motivated serial killer that killed 22 people across 12 states, including right here in Utah, where the killer killed some of Mitchell's friends at Liberty Park 33 years ago. Mitchell dealt with her post-traumatic stress disorder by putting herself into her artwork, and there is a show on hand at Art Access showing the results of her work. Slug writer Tim Cronenberg sat down with Mitchell to talk about her experience and the exhibit.
So you've been getting quite a lot of recognition lately. Without going into too much detail on that, could you please explain to me what you're doing?
Right now, I am creating art to heal my post-traumatic stress disorder.
Would you mind sharing your story with us a little bit?
Sure. In 1980, when I was 15 years old, I was jogging in a crosswalk with three friends, another 15-year-old white girl, and I'm considered white when you look at me. A lot of people assume that I am. My mother's half Mexican, but anyway. The other boys, or the men that were with us, were black. And when I say boys because 18 and 20, they were both very young, 18 and 20 years old, and to me, that's so young that it feels like children to me. But we were jogging in Liberty Park, and we were stalked, pretty much hunted, by a racist serial killer who had gone through at least 12 states and killed at least 22 people trying to start a race war. He shot us for race mixing. It really changed everything for me and so many people. This is a story that a lot of people don't know or have forgotten.
Could you tell me a little bit about your recent art exhibit for ArtSpace?
I was at Salt Lake Community College and my first semester.
What year was that, by the way?
That was in 2012. Okay. And I was taking a design course and a race and ethnicities course. I was going back to school to get my degree in visual art and design with specializing in multimedia, hoping that I could do better within marketing for my business. And as I was doing it, at the very end of the course for the design class, we were asked to create a mask. And the mask that I thought about doing was going to be Spring Mask about Demeter or Persephone, just something mythological. But then I got the idea of why don't I make the mask of what I hide from everybody. I thought of these newspaper articles that had occurred in 2010, which actually was part of the catalyst for getting me back in school, back in college, to want to learn more about race and ethnicity and to learn more about marketing. What ended up happening is I created this mask, and I thought that I could just turn it in and not have to explain it, but I was required to explain the mask to everyone, and I just happened to be wearing a hoodie that day. And it was actually at the right before we did the Trayvon Martin hoodie march. I didn't think I'd have to put the mask on. And I didn't think I'd have to explain it, but I did. And I did it last so it wouldn't like overshadow other people's explanations of their work. And I hurried and I left as soon as the bell rang because I did not want to answer questions. It was very awkward. I had to come out pretty much to everybody in my class that had been, you know, that had only known me as this older woman in their class.
After 30 years.
Yeah, after 32 years. And so, or actually 31 years. And so what ended up happening too is I was taking the race and ethnicity course there.
Yep.
And I walked into that class with this preconceived idea that none of the statistics that they discussed applied to me. Because my father's white, my mother's Mexican, and really the people that healed my heart were the black community. And so as I'm looking at these statistics, I'm like, this doesn't apply to me, this doesn't apply to me. And I just had this mindset, this bias that this does not apply to me. And then at the end of the course, I had to create an essay based on my ethnicity, and I was pissed because I had to pick. And I was like, I'm not white, I'm not Mexican, I'm human. I'm tired of this race illusion bullshit. I told the teacher I don't feel comfortable with choosing this. If I have to pick, I'm picking, you know, African Americans because they are, my children are half black. My children's grandparents from their father's side healed me in a way that I think I could write a book on that, just from their experiences that they'd gone through in the South, and they really embraced me when everybody else was ostracizing me. But I finally just said, okay, fine, I'll just do Mexican, because my mom's Mexican and I was raised by them. Fine, whatever. So I go ahead and I do the research and the statistics, and every single statistic was accurate, and I was floored. I was just like, this is true. So if this is true, then this post-traumatic stress disorder that I've been diagnosed with since I was 15 is also true. And maybe, and so then I started thinking about that, and I got into, well, what are the residual effects of post-traumatic stress disorder? Actually, if you don't address those issues, it has the same effect as traumatic brain injuries. So I started losing my ability to, like, I would be having a conversation, I couldn't communicate the same way. People would be talking to me in English, and I couldn't understand the words they were saying, or I would be reading a book, and I couldn't understand what I was reading, or I couldn't even know the words.
It's like, and so much bottled pressure in a way.
Yeah, and I started having incredible memory lapses, and I started going through anorexia again. After the murders, I became anorexic. I just would go a week without eating, and I got down to like 75 pounds. I mean, that's part of the post-traumatic stress disorder. That's a lot of it. I thought, okay, you think you're so brave. You say you want to go for the truth. You want to know what to do to heal. So what are you going to do about it? And so I started going to counseling for the post-traumatic stress disorder, trying to find a way to heal it, and going to school to keep my mind active, hopefully to strengthen it and make it heal.
To put it on a different track.
Yeah, definitely. And so all this is happening at the same time. Okay, I'm doing the mask and all that fun stuff. I started creating art with my classes while I, you know, over at the Salt Lake Community College, while I'm doing the counseling, and I was blown away at how much healing was occurring just by doing that, by applying the art and counseling together. And it was hard.
Getting it out of your head.
Yeah. And so one of the girls that was in the class where when I talked about the mask got me involved in Brawley Arts, Justice for Some exhibit. And they talked to Art Access. And she just thought that all I had was a mask to show. And we were, you know, she was offering to just have that. But then I said, well, I've got more. And they saw that, and they offered to do the whole exhibit. And that's what they've done. And it's actually become an evolution. I've got another painting that I'm working on that's just incredible right now. But I don't want to rush it. And right now, that whole exhibit is, I think, 6 pieces. I'm going to Sorenson Unity Center today to see if they'd be willing to put that on exhibit, at least until August 28th, which would be the 48th Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech.
Before we go any farther, you said the media and all of that. What do you mean by the media? Like, after the murders, what happened with that?
The murders occurred on August 20th, and they didn't find out who the actual killer was until the end of October. So basically, the newspapers and the reporters gave my full name. I was a 15-year-old victim of a crime. I was shot. They felt like it was my father that did it because he was the president of a motorcycle club called the Barons here. And they were just grasping to find a target to blame, and so they chose me. So they ended up putting my address in the paper under my name, so that the way that I felt like they were trying to say, well, let's let whoever started this finish this with this girl. I really felt way. And when my mother contacted the newspapers and the reporters, they said, well, the public has a right to know. She's a victim, so they have a right to know. But they didn't put the address of the boys of my friends that passed away. They didn't give that address because they were protecting them, but they were dead. They were protecting the families of them, and I totally agree that they should have done that, but they should have extended that courtesy to me and my family.
Absolutely.
And the reporters didn't have an answer to who killed them, so they just kept pounding it into their stories that it was most likely me that set them up and my father that did it. But my father was out of town, and he would never have done something like that, neither would I. But even as they found the killer, they never retracted anything, they never apologized for anything, and as the trials ensued, they still kind of made me an example. Not kind of, they did make me an example of what happens to good white girls that race mix.
Jeez. That's unbelievable. You're going to be doing some classes at SLIC for the race and ethnicity thing. You're going to just do presentations and kind of inform the students a little bit. What's for the future other than that? Is your exhibit traveling? Or?
I'm hoping to get it traveling within Utah. Ted Wilson said that he would help me speak to the mayor here, the current mayor, and a few other people that are interested in race and ethnicity within Utah. The Utah Historic Foundation, I think, Society, has contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in submitting an article for their quarterly newsletter that is just historian-based information. They and I both kind of question whether I can do that without bias, without emotion, because it's only the facts.
Be objective.
Yeah, be objective. My thought is, as I do that, I will be writing a book based on my feelings about it, but we'll see how that goes. It's supposed to be out next year. I'm going to the Sorenson Unity Center to see if they would be willing to use my art in their building. University of Utah Marriott Library indicated that they would be interested in exhibiting that art as well. A few places have been interested in doing that, so that's in the works. Also, Salt Lake Community College, I really feel, helped me get this out there, and I want to make sure that I offer that to them for any of the classes that would benefit the students to an understanding of this. But I was thinking about going to the Southern Poverty Law Center and asking, once it's been around Utah enough, to, you know, get this traveling around America, because it's important. It addresses PTSD, it addresses racism, it addresses healing, and it addresses solutions to these. Maybe not, I'm not saying it has all the solutions, but these are things that we're working towards.
You're definitely putting it out there. So basically you're just lone wolfing it by yourself right now.
Yeah.
Are you trying? Are you just doing the artistic thing right now? You said you had the book too. Are you doing a book and art? Is that like your main focus, or are you involved with other organizations right now?
Well, pretty much. Whenever an organization contacts me that's interested in healing racism, I generally say yes. So I was part of the writing and for social justice at Salt Lake Community College, and I will be involved in that next year as well.
Okay.
I want to always put myself out there for those kinds of things because I think they matter.
So have you heard anything new from the news side of things? Or
yes, actually a London paper picked up an article from Globe magazine from Salt Lake Community College, and Rod Arquette has a talk show. I didn't know who he was, but they had seen the article in London. So they're Utah-based. I guess maybe they saw the article that was in the Tribune, but they saw the Globe article and asked for me to be interviewed. At that point, that same day, CBS News 48 Hours contacted me and indicated that they are interested in doing a one-hour documentary on this subject, the art, and what happened with my friends, Ted and Dave. And then also I was contacted by a filmmaker that's interested in making a documentary on the evolution of this whole process as I've been putting this together and trying to change the world. And so it's been kind of amazing that way. I keep finding one more thing happening. It's kind of like that lotus. It's unfolding one petal at a time and becoming more beautiful than I thought it could be.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
and unexpected.
Like, it's all still a work in progress, though. Nothing too soon coming out, though, right? Or
yeah, I'm anticipating that by next year everything will be coming out. But I don't really know how long it takes to put this stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got several pieces that I'm working on in terms of art that are related to rape and victim blaming and that sort of thing that will be, you know, hopefully exhibited in other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that are going on right now. But honestly, every single day, one more thing happens and one more, like, news outlet calls me, or some underground magazine or something like that will, somebody from those places will call me. And as long as they are interested in healing this, I'm totally down with being there. I have been asked by A&E to talk about the murders from the victim's point of view, but I don't know that they're going to do that. It seemed that they were more interested in sensationalizing this than, you know, the murders, than hearing the voice of the victims. And I'm not interested in, you know, giving props to a murderer. So I'm only interested in healing this.
You just want to fix it up. And yeah, you're like, and you said you're not making profit off of your art.
No, not at all. I've actually had people offer me money for it, but this is my community's art. As far as I'm concerned, you know, it's an evolution of healing for me and my community, and I'm not selling it. I'm just donating it or loaning it out to the people that really care about healing this.
To find out more about the exhibit, visit artaccess.org. Mm-hmm. This is your weekly daily calendar starting on, hey, what do you know, July 30th, my birthday. That means it's going to be super raging, people. And it runs through August 5th. As always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com, check out the events that are happening all over Salt Lake City and beyond, find something for yourself. When I peruse this week's listings, there is a bunch of great stuff happening, starting right there on Tuesday, July 30th. Frightened Rabbit, a fine Scottish rock and roll band. They're headlining at the Depot after packing the Urban Lounge a couple times on their past tours. That's where I'll be. Should be a great show. If I wasn't at Frightened Rabbit, I'd be up at Red Butte Garden getting my classic country on with Merle Haggard. You cannot beat that guy. He's slightly unhinged, kind of a crazy cat, puts on great shows, written some of the best country songs ever recorded. Definitely a worthwhile show up at Red Butte. Wednesday, July 31st, a diverse array of things happening. Mac Miller, hip hopper, over at the Complex, definitely a buzz act right now, a little obnoxious. Infamous String Dusters, a great bluegrass influenced band. They're headlining at the Depot, while way out there at USANA Amphitheater, it is Rush, headlining their first tour in Salt Lake since they went into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Thursday, August 1st, a ton of shows going on. I know one that a lot of people are excited about is over at the Twilight Concert Series, where the National are coming through for the first time in quite a while, joined by Sharon Van Etten. That should be an amazing show. Over at the Depot, The Cult is coming through, playing their album Electric in its entirety. Those of us of a certain age certainly love the Electric album. It's one of the best of the 80s. Out there at the USANA Amphitheater again, it is Bob Dylan, Wilco, My Morning Jacket, and Ryan Bingham joining up for the Americana Rama Festival. That'll be a blast. And also in West Valley City at the Maverick Center, Megadeth and Black Label Society bring some big, loud, crunchy rock. Megadeth was so much cooler before Mustaine went into rehab, but they have a whole bunch of good songs, so it might be worth your while. Friday, August 2nd, besides picking up a brand new issue of Slug Magazine, you might want to consider a trip to Deer Valley, where the Utah Symphony is getting into the music of the James Bond films. That could be fun. Or head down to Provo for the Rooftop Concert Series, this time featuring Mindy Gledhill, Mid-O, and Scott Shepherd on the bill. That's free. Starts at 7:30. Saturday, August 3rd, Aesop Rock and Kimya Dawson are joining forces for a group they're calling the Uncludeds. That's at Kilby Court. Over at the Stateroom, great roots rock, roots country, whatever you want to call it. Hayes Carl's got it covered. He is an amazing songwriter. Really recommend that one. Toll Truck Trio, the final show in Salt Lake City, allegedly, joined by the Rubes and Selma at the Urban Lounge. And then on Sunday, August 4th, I'd encourage you to check out the Taste of the Wasatch event. 100% of the proceeds go to Feed the Homeless right here in Utah. Amazing selections of restaurants from all over Utah up there. And that night up at Deer Valley, Darlene Love, one of the legendary voices of the Phil Spector sound, that wall of sound from the 50s and 60s, she is headlining a show along with a group of Muscle Shoals, Alabama soul music legends. That should be an amazing show. Slugmag.com, as always, go check it out every day. You can even add your own events for free or for a mere $5 a month or $50 for a year. Add some quality links to your content. Be sure to check it out every day. Mid-O is a two-piece electro-pop band from right here in Salt Lake City, featuring Libby Linton, who you may have seen doing some of her own solo stuff, along with Spencer J. Harrison. They launched a Kickstarter program last year to gain funding to put together their first album, a self-titled debut that's coming out later this summer. We're going to play a song from that one called Benny.
Benny, won't you be the one to rewrite all of my lines? Just hold the candle without blowing out the flame. Come on, make it happen. Come on, make it happen. I'm gonna make it happen. So many lives you never let. Sold for lack of any terrible mistake. Try to make it soften. Try to make it soften. Yeah, and try to make it soften. Morning light, daily refrain. Those heavy eyes and so plastic can make you tick. The tangible can make you whole. Consumed forever, every second that you got. It's louder and it won't stop. It's louder and it won't stop.
Middo will be performing at the Rooftop Concert Series on August 2nd down Provo Way, playing along with Mindy Gledhill and Scott Shepherd. The show is totally free and starts at 7:30. For more information on the group, visit them online at middomusic.com. Well, even though it's the end of July and all of you people listening have been already enjoying the beer issue of Slug that's been out there all month, full of quality information, we're bringing Mike Riedel in to give us the lowdown on what's next, because the beer never stops.
Never stops.
Never stops in Salt Lake City or Utah. Welcome, first of all. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Rose, having me back.
Absolutely. Why don't we dive into some of the new beers we're all going to be running across here starting in August?
Well, one of the bigger surprises I came across was a very limited seasonal from Uinta, and it's not just Uinta. About 20 breweries from around the country were given a special variety of hops that's only owned by one or two breweries.
Okay.
And they were saying, you can use this hop, make a special beer for it, and then we're gonna donate some proceeds from the sale of this special beer to ALS research.
Okay.
Lou Gehrig's disease, I believe.
Yep, that is
so
right.
They came up with a special hoppy wheat ale, which is really nice. This has got a really nice citrusy profile to it, and it's got a nice doughy breadiness from the wheat.
Wheat, yeah.
And it's a great summer quencher, especially in these hot damn days.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you couldn't do better. And
nice.
I think a buck from every pint goes to ALS research.
Oh,
and that's
wow,
pretty
that's
good.
Awesome. Nice. So they're going to be selling it. Is this something that'll be popping up in bars on
this
draft?
This is only in a few places. It's okay. At the brewery,
okay,
the Bayou, the Beer Hive, Bar X, and I believe it's at Granary. And
amazing cause, and sounds like a delicious beer.
Really
sure.
Is. Really is. So get it before it's gone, because it's going to go fast, because this is delicious.
Nice.
On the other end of the spectrum, Squatters has their season. One of their seasonals out right now. It's a bumper crop that came out about a year ago, and it was one of their small batch series. Came in a bottle, and it was about 5.5% beer.
Yeah,
wasn't too strong, but it was strong enough to be in a bottle.
Right.
And they dialed that down a little bit so they could put it on draft because it was very popular.
Oh, nice.
And what makes it so special is it's made with lavender.
Yeah.
And it's a very floral beer, and you do get the lavender. It's not too overpowering, but
You won't mistake it for not having lavender. Yeah.
So if you if you don't like your beer tasting like your wife's body bath stuff,
right.
Then
I ran into a lot of lavender at the farmer's market lately. Utah, we love lavender.
do we? And that's not a bad beer, and it's got a low profile. And
I like that they took it down so they could get it out there on draft, because reacting to have people how much they liked the original.
That's
great. And that's not easy, necessarily.
And Squatters, they got rid of their nitro cream ale, and instead of everybody who had that on tap, these limited specials are going to go on. And
sweet.
And the bumper crop is the first to be on that tap. So wherever you used to see your nitro cream ale,
get over it and
try
something new. I like it. A regular rotation of new stuff will be going into that spot then, it sounds like.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. Awesome. Nice. What else?
Keeping with light, summery type beers, Desert Edge has the Bavarian Weiss beer.
Yeah.
And that's a little more estuary, more banana, more clove, but it's still light.
Yeah.
And still take care of you on these... damn hot days.
Dying, right? Yeah. You actually want to sit outside. You could have some delicious beers.
Yeah, and it's just an old school, old world beer.
Nice.
And these are all so very different tasting.
Yeah.
I would get them and try them all.
Yeah, right. Just, that's a good suggestion. Just try them all.
Yeah, why not?
Get on there. Especially, yeah,
you're going to have three anyway,
that's
right?
That's right.
You're not going to have one.
You don't
one.
Need to just beat the same one to death.
And two's just like, well, you know, if I have two, I might as well have three.
That's right. Damn right. And yeah, the fact that they're all light and good summery drinks, I mean, can't ask for better than that.
Yeah, and they're all local.
Excellent. That's right.
Speaking of light and local, now I don't know if you know what Firkin, you know what Firkin is?
I don't know what a Firkin is.
Okay. Firkin.
That's why I was letting you forge ahead.
Yeah.
I was just going to make some crude jokes, but yeah.
Firkin is a cask. It's basically a cask beer. And the Firkin is the size.
Oh, okay.
And which is
a measurement.
Yeah, it's about a quarter barrel.
Okay.
And these have become very popular in town recently. Hoppers started it. They started Fresh Cask Friday about a year ago. And they were basically what they were doing is they were pulling a couple of their beers and they were changing them a little. They would take one beer and he'd add a fruit or
tweak it out
chips
sometime.
To it.
Yeah.
And then he'd take the same beer and he'd also add hops and something else to it. And so you'd have basically one beer made three different ways, available only on one day, and it was a great idea.
Basically, as long as it lasts in that little quarter barrel or something?
Really, and it was, really only would last a day.
That day.
And it did very well, and people started catching on, and Wasatch has been doing it for a while, but you don't get up to Park City that often,
right?
And,
yeah,
and it started to catch on, and basically what a cask is, it's a beer re-fermented in the barrel.
Okay.
There's no CO2 forcing it out. It's just a gravity pour. You tap it with a mallet, and a brass or sometimes plastic spigot. And you just let gravity do the work, and it's basically naturally carbonated and just under room temperature.
Excellent. Oh, man, that sounds good.
So look for those.
Yeah,
those are
like
popping
that.
Up everywhere.
That's event programming right there. Like, you got to know the day and get out and drink it.
Yeah, I keep apprising my blog at Utah Beer.
Always.
And try and tell you where all the Firkins are being poured. So we've got Bayou pouring them every Friday.
Nice.
We've got Hoppers pouring them semi-regularly on Friday. Red Rock just started doing it. Poplar Street's pouring them.
Wow.
And I think you'll find them also at, what's that Irish pub local chain that's floating
McCool's?
Around. McCool's.
Oh, yeah.
And they're floating some of the Wasatch Squatters.
Oh, wow.
So
nice.
Look for the Firkins.
So there's quite a few opportunities there then. Yeah.
And try them, and they're awesome.
That
they really
sounds
are.
Great.
And
yeah.
It's a chance to try, you know, pub ales that you would normally find in the UK.
Yeah, nice. Very traditional, do they do it like room temperature? Do they?
Pretty much. They're mostly refrigerated for most of the day, and they get tapped in the afternoon. So.
And then it's like, drink up, everybody.
Yeah.
It'll be gone.
And they're great after-work beers because they're not really, they're not going to knock your dick in the dirt.
Right.
And you're going to have a nice, quenching beer.
Yeah, that sounds great.
To take you down.
And a good excuse, you could even bar hop and do these things. There's enough of them doing. That's a good thing. Excellent. Nice. Well, and then you also have a... sort of a new twist for one of our old favorites here locally here.
Yeah, Epic's been going crazy lately. They have. I mean, they've been blowing up. They're, you know, they can't keep up with sales.
Yeah.
And then they decided we're growing too big and our East Coast operations are starting to suffer. So they decided they're going to build another brewery, and they do that in Denver.
Yeah.
Which is online right now.
Yep.
And they're cranking out beer there. And since that wasn't big enough, they decided we need to tap into a little more of the local market because our tiny little tapless tap room at the brewery, you know, the seats to hold maybe six people.
That's right.
Isn't doing it. So they're starting their own brew pub in Sugar House called The Annex.
Oh, okay.
And that's going to be its own separate thing. They're going to have, you know, some favorite epics in bottles, and they're also going to have their own brewery.
They're going to brew there, too.
And yeah, so nice. You'll have some lighter stuff on tap that'll be different from the unsacred stuff you've seen in the grocery stores.
Yeah.
So it's just more beer goodness.
Yeah, that's right. They're growing exponentially. Yeah. And damn it, I had a $1 million idea, you know, a few years ago because Sugar House just was lacking in bars. And suddenly we're getting a whole bevy of bars up and down 21st. And it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a real good thing. I wish I lived closer.
Yeah, right. And once that trolley car gets put in over there, like, you can just kind of bounce your way off and on to bars all over the place over there.
I think it'd be perfect. Hopefully, though, with Sugar House being the area it is with a lot of restaurants and now a lot of nightlife action.
That's right.
Hopefully those damn trains will be running a little later.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, get people moving around. And, I mean, that's pretty exciting. And I think it'll probably help Epic get a new audience that maybe doesn't know them just from the store. They might know their beers from restaurants but never really gave them a sample.
Absolutely.
And now it's like go and hang. And it's a cool, the old Granite area that's turning into a Granite Furniture area. I said there's like restaurants and all kinds of stuff moving in right there.
Yeah,
so
that whole building's going to be full. And that's where Epic's new place is going to be. And look for that, I'm saying, mid to late fall.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming in, as always. Everybody will want to go see Mike's blog, utahbeer.blogspot.com. Pick up the beer issue, as always. And
yeah, we did a lot of work on that damn thing.
That's right.
Read it.
Be sure to read it all. And we'll have your beer reviews in every issue of Slug, of course. So,
hell yeah.
All good stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dan.
As always, thanks for listening to the Soundwaves from the Underground, and for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit us online at slugmag.com. Craft Lake City is quickly approaching. We'd like to hear what you're most excited about seeing at the festival this year. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We just might play you on the air. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Once again, be sure to fire us up again next week. It is all Craft Lake City all the time on the Soundwaves from the Underground. Thank you very much.